We bid you welcome. We come with weary spirits seeking rest.
Who come with troubles that are too much with you. Who come hurt and afraid.
We bid you welcome. We come with hope in your heart.
Who come with anticipation in your step. Who come proud and joyous.
We bid you welcome, who are seekers of a new faith.
Who come to probe and explore, who come to learn.
We bid you welcome, who enter this hall as a homecoming.
Who have found here room for your spirit, who find in this people a family.
Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey,
we bid you welcome. We're aware that the larger group of you are worshiping with us now online, and we welcome you, whether you're watching this live or in an archived version. We invite you to go to our Facebook page, find there a greeting intentionally for this service. Respond with your comment so that others recognize that they aren't out there in virtual land alone. And for those of us here in this space, I invite us now to take a moment and greet one another. Welcome.
Thank you.
We light our chalice this morning to celebrate the practice of forgiveness, which is one of the most important contributions to the healing of the world, and remembering that we are all broken in some way.
Our first reading is entitled The Snowy Egret. It's by poet Nancy Keating from her collection White Chick. Give me another word for regret. Something more like forget, only better. More effective, since, in fact, we really don't forget the bad things we did or caused. I read in a letter to the Sun magazine where a man will always remember the egret lying, a silent heap of cirrus clouds at his 12-year-old feet. It was his first and last time shooting a gun. His confession stabbed me into a memory of unremembered shame, and the ache in my stomach, telling me I had joined humanity.
Our second reading is by Branford Marsalis from an interview with Jim Mackney. Humans are imperfect. That's one of the reasons that classical and jazz are in trouble. We're on the quest for the perfect performance, and every note has to be right. Man, every note is not right in life. There are bumps in the road and misses and squeaks. You make a mistake in the studio and the producer says, well, we'll clean that up in the mix. You listen to these classical records and they're absolutely pristine, no mistakes. How is that possible? I go to concerts. No, that's bull. I've never been to a performance where a musician doesn't miss notes.
In the early days of the 18th century, a young English poet, 23-year-old Alexander Pope, penned an essay on criticism. We may not know that work by name, but we probably recognize certain aphorisms from it. A little learning is a dangerous thing. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And more to today's topic, to err is to forgive. You do recognize it. To err, blunder, deviate, fall, flub, lapse, misbehave, offend, sin, stray, stumble, transgress, to foul up, goof up, mess up, screw up, or otherwise F up. The sheer number of ways we find to say it should tell us something. We all make mistakes. It's a big topic, and I can't possibly cover it all today, so maybe I should just dive right into the deep end and offer the three biggest mistakes we make. The three biggest mistakes are: one, overpromising, and two, under-delivering. It was June 1961 in Vienna, another tense time in the often tense relationship between our nation and Russia, then the Soviet Union. Less than 5 months into office, just 6 weeks after the botched Bay of Pigs fiasco, U.S. President John F. Kennedy had 2 days of talks with Nikita Khrushchev, the Soviet premier. It was an encounter Kennedy would assess as the worst thing in my life. At a particularly heated point, Kennedy asked Khrushchev, "Do you ever admit a mistake?" "Certainly," the wily premier retorted. "In a speech before the 20th Party of Congress, I admitted all of Stalin's mistakes." Of us, some might similarly ask, do Unitarian Universalists ever admit mistakes? Other religions have daily or weekly opportunities for their adherents to admit their mistakes. Holy days, even sacred seasons for deep introspection and for making amends. Meanwhile, we, who can be so vocal about all the mistakes that they are making, have no such clearly designated time in our daily, our weekly, even our annual spiritual practices. David Huebner served for years on our national staff and spoke to that staff just before his retirement. In part, this highly respected minister said, "I'm not suggesting here that we add back the concept of absolute human sinfulness to our purposes and principles, but rather that we work a bit harder to build into our theology and our lives a deeper appreciation that being human means not only aspiration and hope, but also failure and loss. Being human also means failure and loss." Isn't that what poet Nancy Keating was trying to say? Acknowledging her awareness of the bad things she did and caused, she names the accompanying ache in her stomach as a signal that she writes, I had joined humanity. The great saxophone player Branford Marsalis admits the same. Humans are imperfect. Maybe that young British poet was onto something. To err, remember, is human. Ministers are human. You know that. All ministers are human. Tish Harrison Warren, an Anglican priest, writing in the New York Times a few weeks ago, admitted, I will get much wrong. As a writer, I'll say things, however unintentionally, that are untrue and even unhelpful. As a mother, I will harm my children in real ways, not just dismissible, well, shucks, we all make mistakes kind of ways. Then she continued, as a priest, I will lead people astray. I will not live up to what I proclaim. I will fail. I will hurt people, not just in theory or abstraction. I will cause true harm. Yes. Me too. Me too. I am human. Now taking stock of almost 4 decades as a minister, almost 2 decades as your minister, I know I've made mistakes. I'm now painfully aware of the times that I've fouled up, goofed up, messed up, screwed up, and out, effed up. For letting you down. For talking a better game than I've lived. For being insensitive. For allowing my passion and my idealism to outrun compassion and kindness. For not listening deeply enough and for responding too quickly. For giving in to discouragement. And for failing to see the best in you. I'm sorry. Really. I'm sorry. I'm not staging some public act of self-flagellation. I'm not actually racked by debilitating guilt or burdened by unceasing shame. I just know I've made mistakes. I have repeatedly joined humanity. Or rather, I've renewed my lifetime membership in the company of the imperfect. For the ways it has hurt you and has hampered us, I am sorry. In her Times opinion piece, Tish Harrison Warren cited a British Anglican prelate named Francis Spufford, who gives sin a distinctly unchurchy definition. For Spufford, sin is the human propensity to F things up. That human propensity is not just, he writes, our tendency to lurch and stumble and screw up by accident, but also our active inclination to break stuff, stuff here, including moods, promises, relationships we care about, our own well-being, and other people's. In the end, Francis Spufford writes, almost everyone recognizes this as one of the truths about themselves. Now, I realize most of us here, most of you who are watching or who will later watch this, are Unitarian Universalists. I'm aware that we've intentionally chosen a religion with a clear and convincing emphasis on our worth and dignity, on human potential and grandeur. But even here, we are among those who make mistakes. And I'm not just talking about me. I'm not inviting you to notice or pay attention to someone else's mistakes. Without a ritual or a season to which I can point, I'm inviting you today to consider the mistakes you've made, the ways you've effed things up. The late Unitarian Universalist minister Forrest Church, who made what some regard as more than his share of mistakes, offers a quick spiritual lesson on these matters. I define the word sin simply, he writes. It is anything that divides us within ourselves, against our neighbor, from the ground of our being, the God of all creation. How is that your truth? My truth? How have we been divisive? How are we broken? Forrest Church continues, salvation from Latin means health. The words holy and whole share the same root. Salvation from sin is reconciliation. On those rare yet blessed moments, Forrest Church writes, when we make full peace with ourselves, with others, and with our Creator, we experience salvation, health, wholeness. We need not use those words at all. We don't need to refer to either sin or salvation. That's not the point anyway. May we find ways to admit how we have been divisive, how we have broken stuff, effed things up. In acknowledging not what others have done, but what we ourselves have done, may we each find health, wholeness, reconciliation. May we experience peace. Thank you.
but welcome. We're happy you're with us today in this room or joining us remotely. We are pleased to have guests with us in this room and participating through our live stream. Our members would like to greet those of you who are here following the service. So if you are visiting, please raise your hand and keep it up. Members, take note of guests seated near you and invite them to join you for coffee and conversation when the service ends. If you are visiting us by way of our live stream or viewing an archived version of this service, we welcome an opportunity to connect with you. Reach out to our Director of Member Relations, Kelly Green. You can email her at kelly@uucharlotte.org. Should it enhance your experience of future services, we offer large print orders of service, personal hearing assistance devices, and have an elevator available as well. Welcome to each of you, visitor and member alike. My name is Rita Heesinger, and my pronouns are she, her. I have been a proud member of the UUCC since 1988. I want to start by saying I am sorry. Sorry for my hoarse voice. I was this close to backing out of this commitment, but how could I let Jay and the rest of you down? I have a case of laryngitis, nothing more seriously. Trust me, I've over-tested myself. And if my husband, John, was still alive, would say that's not necessarily a bad thing. Earlier this week at work, I had to perform a lung function test on a 92-year-old who was very hard of hearing. I had to scream at the top of my lungs while her son was also in the room trying to get her to understand the instructions. At one point, he finally threw up his hands and said, "Mama, you aren't listening to her." I gently sat him down, put my shoulder around him and said, "She's doing the best she can." Needless to say, we finished the test. I got some pretty decent results for her physician. They were grateful. We parted ways, and I developed laryngitis the next day. That's why I will have my mask on after service. This whole interaction brought to my attention how often we feel sorry for when our actions disappoint others, even if it's someone we don't know. Growing up Catholic and going to confession was something we were regularly required to do. I can still recall the ritual of going into the dark confessional and waiting to tell my sins. Now, mind you, these were my early years, so my sins were really usually pretty benign, like I was mean to my sister, or I disrespected my parents. But usually, the variety of how my actions affected someone else. How I possibly let someone else down or fell short of their expectations of me. The steps, as I remember, were you must be contrite or sorry for your sins, you must confess those sins fully, and be willing to do penance and make amends for your sins. I obviously don't practice that sacrament anymore, but what it did provide me with is a lifelong foundation for being able to say, "I'm sorry. I know I disappointed you. I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. I will do better next time. You can count on me. You have my commitment." Thank you.
Thank you.
I echo Rita's welcome to you. Thank you for being here. Your presence makes a difference. I hope you'll be back next Sunday and on subsequent Sundays. However, please be mindful that beginning next Sunday, we are changing to a new time. Our service will begin at 10 a.m. Starting next week, 10 a.m. What time is the service next week? We'll bombard you with that information this week, but lock it in. Next week, 10 o'clock. It's not so that you can get this over with early. We've heard many of you request an earlier service time, and this is our response. While the shift to this new time will be in effect for the foreseeable future, it will be especially helpful next week when we gather for our congregational conversation and annual meeting. The meeting will take place as soon as possible after the conclusion of the service next week, which begins at 10 o'clock. We continue to share what we collect in our baskets each Sunday and through our electronic giving portals. Today's our last opportunity to give in support of the work of the Reentry Housing Alliance. Please give generously when the basket passes you or through one of our electronic means. Mindful of tomorrow's holiday, we hold in grateful memory all of those who gave of themselves in service to our nation and its high aspirations. For those in military service and those otherwise martyred in service to justice, equity, peace, may a grateful nation remember. What words are there to offer in response to the utter tragedy of this past week? With hearts still raw from a racist rampage in Buffalo, we can hardly bear the news from Uvalde, Texas. We feel so many things in response. I turned again for myself this week to words from Sean Neil Barron from Bill Sinkford's meditation manual called To Wake, To Rise. Neil Barron writes, "There are not enough candles in the world. Not if we lit one each time death came to knock. For each man gunned down, each trans person attacked, for each woman left battered, for each child caught in the crossfire." In our hearts, our prayers, in our rage, in our advocacy, we name anew that web of all existence in which we move and have our being. May a devastated community feel a nation's concern. And may a divided nation find its way to something saving while there is still time.
Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream.
Without some designated time, some special season, let us open our hearts, our souls now to a ritual of confession. What we offer today is but an example, an opportunity, one each of us may re-engage at any point. There's a Hasidic saying that attests. Rabbi Shmelka of Nicholsburg said, "The Talmud tells us that if all the world were to repent, the Messiah would come." Knowing this, I decided to do something about it. Where to begin? The world. It was too large, and I was too small. So I thought, let me start with my own country. That too proved too much for me. My own town, I failed there as well. My neighborhood, my own family, even there I did not succeed. Never mind, I thought. I shall work on myself. With oneself, one reaches the irreducible minimum. We can each begin with ourselves. I invite us to reflect now in silence on the ways we have failed ourselves and have failed others. Please join me in a responsive litany of atonement written by my dear colleague, Rob Eller Isaacs. I'll offer the plain type. I'll invite you to respond with the bold. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible,
I forgive myself, I forgive you, begin again with love.
For each time that we have struck out in anger without just cause, for each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others.
I forgive myself. I forgive you. Begin again with love.
For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone. For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit.
I forgive myself. I forgive you. Begin again in love.
For losing sight of our unity.
I forgive myself. I forgive you. Begin again in love.
For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
I forgive myself. I forgive you. Begin again in love.
Confession is not about guilt or about shame. It's about release. It's about health. It's about wholeness. We tell the truth to ourselves, to those whom we have wronged, and we start over, renewed. We share together now in an affirmation of our faith. Please rise in body and our spirit. We share in words from my late classmate and colleague, Nancy Schaefer. Because
we are imperfect and love so deeply, we never will have enough days. We need the gift of starting over, beginning again. Just this constant good, this saving hope.
Thank you.
If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world.
If you have found comfort, go and share it with others.
If you have dreamed dreams, help one another that they may come true.
If you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world.
Go in peace.
Go in peace.
Please be seated.